They're still trying to prove Nietzsche right. Good luck! Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And if you're talking about getting Nietzsche right, I hope it's not the quote he's roundly reviled for, and that is, if thou goest to women, be sure to take thy whip.
No, that's not exactly the one that I was I was thinking more along the lines of the God is Dead movement.
Yeah, I kind of wondered.
Yeah, well, I haven't read enough Nietzsche to realize that was one of his quotes. You learn something new on this program every day, ladies and gentlemen, and maybe we should put a disclaimer up front that we're going to be delving into some weird territory today.
Nietzsche, let's just say, was not exactly a stable individual.
No, but many people who try to deny God prove themselves to be very unstable in the long analysis, Chuck. And I think that's kind of a fitting thought for what we're going to be talking about today. Because you found an interesting article over the weekend that was on livescience.com from Yahoo News. And by a young lady by the name of Natalie Wolkover. And it was titled, "Will Science Someday Rule Out the Possibility of God?" Well, I know our listening audience is already tuning us out and they're saying, well, the answer to that is no. Click, we're done.
Yeah.
It's not that easy, ladies and gentlemen. As a matter of fact, it's something that we really ought to be paying very close attention to, because this is where your what we call the fallacy detective or the baloney detector really gets played. You can really sharpen yourself by listening to the scientists trying to figure out a way to fit God out of the created universe.
I will make a prediction as a scientist. They will make grandiose gestures about how they're going to be able to, in the future, beat their chests and completely fail. As they have completely failed in the past, they will continue to completely fail because the presuppositions behind the effort are incorrect. How do we know they're incorrect? All we have to do is read the first sentence in the article.
Yes.
And we find the first mistake.
Yes, we do. Let me read that first sentence to people. Ms. Wolkover starts her article this way. Over the past few centuries, science can be said to have gradually chipped away at the traditional grounds for believing in God. That's her opening line. Now, Chuck, have fun.
Well, the fact is that science has chipped away at nothing. Science has solved some mysteries. And it's some mysteries regarding how things are put together, the mystery of the atom, the mystery of certain parts of physics. And the false idea here is that because we have an inkling of how these things work, is that we have mastered them. For instance, I always laugh about biologists who will go back and tell you, I read an article several months ago that talked about the fact that we have the ability to take a chicken and work back to a dinosaur with the proper genetic manipulation. And now, you and I talked about that, and do you remember what my reply was? I said, no, you can't, because if you could have, you would have.
Well, that's there you go. That's right.
And there's a lot of these kinds of claims out there. And you actually can backbreed for all kinds of primitive characteristics, but you can only go back so far. And the fact is, you cannot backbreed a chicken into a dinosaur. It's just not going to happen. And like I said, if they could have, they would have. Supposedly, if it were possible, it wouldn't be that tough, because you could do it with a population of chickens and pretty soon you'd be breeding dinosaurs. Well, that's not going to happen. A, it's expensive if it's possible, but somebody would cough up the money. Do you think there aren't a bunch of atheists out there so desperate to disprove the idea of special creation that they wouldn't cough up or get somebody with billions of dollars who's an atheist like George Soros to cough up $1 billion so they could run this scientific inquiry into the non-existence of God? Well, of course they would. So where is it?
Well, they're still trying to work out the glitches, Chuck. So that's what that's all about. And honestly, it's interesting because they're still hedging their bets even in this article, because the author quotes a theoretical cosmologist at the California Institute of Technology by the name of Sean Carroll, who says that there's good reason to think science will ultimately arrive at a complete understanding of the universe that leaves no grounds for God whatsoever. And he uses the same argument, well, God's sphere of influence has shrunk drastically. What sphere of influence is that? I thought God's sphere of influence was the entire creation. If I remember correctly, even Christ said in Matthew 28:18, all authority has been given me in heaven and in earth. That would kind of make all the delimiter here, I believe.
Well, there's another issue here, Barry. I love to read these things because we're going back and we're talking about the beginning of time.
Well,
and
yes.
We talk about it in terms of the Big Bang. The Big Bang, of course, is the beginning of time.
Something we all know about intrinsically because, well, hey, we were there, right?
That's right. We know it happened because it was observed. Well, no, it wasn't. We're putting the idea of the Big Bang together from observational data of certain things that match a theory about what may have happened at the beginning of when the universe exploded into being, quote unquote. Now, of course, Barry, that begs the question now, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
What did the universe explode into being, quote unquote, from? Well, the entire theory goes back to the, quote unquote, cosmic egg, okay?
Oh, the cosmic egg. Which came first, the universe or the egg?
Well, the chicken that can be bred to a dinosaur or the egg. Well, apparently the cosmic egg came first.
Okay.
The theist asks if he's thinking. Ask this question. Where did the cosmic egg come from?
Exactly.
Now,
we're getting back to what theologians and philosophers call the uncaused first cause.
Bingo. This is exactly where we're going with this because I heard Carl Sagan ask this question in a debate once, and Carl Sagan says, I don't feel the need to answer that question. Okay, Barry, the reason he did not feel the need to answer that question was because it delves into the area of philosophy and not into quote-unquote science. Well, okay, Dr. Carl Sagan got the doctor by earning a Ph.D., a doctor of philosophy, which means he supposedly had an understanding of his field from a philosophical basis. And his field was cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
That means that a very relevant question to the philosophy of cosmology is, where did the cosmic egg come from? Now, I have heard this question asked of atheistic cosmologists, and their answer is always, well, it just was. Barry, there is no greater statement of faith than that particular statement.
Well, I was just about to say, that sounds to me like a God statement.
That's exactly a God statement. The difference here being that the Christian believes, at least the one who's thought it out to this point. Now, look, folks, we are not asking you to think these things out this far. The fact is, most people, A, are bored by that.
Wait. Stop. Chuck, I'm going to have to correct you there. We are asking people to think things out this far because it's only when you stop and think through an issue like this that you stop being deceived by a bunch of snake oil salesmen who want to throw science out there as the be-all and end-all answer to every question.
Well, it's these explanations that your children are getting when they go to college, and the fact is, if they are thinking at this level, they should be able to ask that cosmology professor, where did the cosmic egg come from? And when he says it just is, then that child should be philosophically able to say, you know, that's unsatisfactory. The fact is that the only difference between you and a Christian creationist is the fact that we believe God created it from nothing. That there was no such thing as a cosmic egg. There was no such thing as physicality. God created the entirety of physicality. Now, I agree this is an abstract, but physicality is a concept, all right? That means what I'm saying about that is, like we'll give credit to where it's due, Dr. Greg Bahnsen, who basically got this from Greek philosophy as well, the certain concepts exist, but they do not exist in the physical realm. For instance, the concept of two-ness. If you have two pencils in front of you, you know that there are two of them. But if you write two down on a blackboard and ask everybody what it is, they'll say it's two. And then you erase it. Does that wipe out two? Two-ness. The answer is no. You can't destroy two-ness. You've destroyed the numeral two, which is a representation, is a physical representation of an abstract concept, and that is two-ness. Okay, I realize this may be a little difficult to understand, but the fact is you can't wipe out two-ness because it exists in a realm outside the physical. This is where science goes bad. The very basis of their own work goes back to abstracts that exist in places that are not physical. For instance, Greg Bahnsen uses another example, and that is duckness. When you see a duck, you automatically recognize it as a duck. When you see a chair, you automatically recognize it as a chair. You might try to define it. Four legs and a seat and a back. Well, guess what? I'm sitting on a stool. It doesn't have a back. It has four legs. My daughters have a papasan chair that really is, doesn't have a back and doesn't have a seat. It's all rolled up into one, and it sits on a pedestal. But it's still a chair, and I recognize it as a chair. That's because it's an abstract concept, and Indeed. There is no perfect representation of that particular concept. So we know things exist outside of the physical realm. For instance,
Correct.
Greg Bonson was in a great debate with a man named Gordon Stein.
Who was a committed atheist.
A committed atheist and a scientist who made the statement that there is absolutely nothing beyond the physical realm that has any effect on anything that he did. And Gordon Stein had just gotten done doing a big soliloquy on logic and how atheists rely on reason and reason alone, blah, 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 and the whole thing. And he said to Greg Bonson and opened the door as wide as it could go, and he said, name something that's outside the physical realm that actually affects something that I do. And Greg Bonson looked at him and said, how about the laws of logic? Well, the room actually went silent for a minute, and then it went wild because everybody understood what Bonson had just done. He had proven that there was something beyond the physical, which does directly affect the way the physical world operates. Now, there have been attempts in the meantime. That, by the way, I think that's part of the transcendental argument for God.
Right, it is.
And what they mean by that, the transcendence is the quality of being above and beyond the physical, what you can see, feel, touch, taste, smell. And that particular argument is part of the transcendental argument for God, because there are things that are transcendent, and therefore there is a realm that is transcendent, and that is where God exists. Of course, God also exists in the physical, because he sent his son, Jesus Christ. Okay, that being said, the fact that that thing exists negates the entire idea. Now, the atheists have gone back and tried to make it say, well, the laws of logic are merely conventions. We all agree that they work this way. Really? Well, okay, try an illogical argument on somebody and try to make it apply in a physical sense and see what happens. If you try to build a building illogically, what happens to it?
It collapses. It falls down. That's exactly what happens to it.
Because logic is a requirement. And ask any mathematician who's calculating how a wall will bear weight. If he can just sort of willy-nilly throw it up and make all kinds of odd shapes and angles and all kinds of things, then the answer is no, he'll laugh at you. And there's a reason for that. Because the laws of mathematics apply to the physical world, and those exist in the transcendental realm. So this idea that somehow we're going to go with a complete... Now, what's going on here with this cosmologist is that he has what we call a materialist presupposition.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it was best stated again by Dr. Carl Sagan, who said, the universe is all there is, all there was, and all there ever will be. And the obvious reply to that is, how do you know?
Because they're taking it on faith, Chuck.
Exactly. And Barry, that's the whole bottom line here. That the fact is that science is as much about faith as religion, as Christianity is. Mm-hmm. And to deny that is to deny fact that when you break it down and take the arguments back to their base, to their philosophical underpinnings, it's as much an article of faith as the physical, that the physical is self-existent, the uncaused first cause. Now, we haven't done this as well as R.C. Sproul can.
No.
Because I listened to Sproul's lectures on this, which is why I understand this well. And I'm not kidding myself that I understand it as well as Sproul does. But the fact is that, honestly, you should be teaching your kids to think this way so that when they do go to college, they can ask these questions. And even if they don't really want to ask the questions, they can hold on to their faith while they're assaulted with this kind of thinking. Because this kind of thinking is what's being taught to them in college. And this is why huge numbers of kids go to college. They're confronted with this kind of quote-unquote evidence, and they walk away from the faith because they don't understand it from the deeper level. And we aren't teaching them it to them on the deeper level. I would suggest they hook up with certain ministries like, for instance, Ken Ham and Answers in Genesis, Creation Research Institute. Any number of places are actually looking at these things scientifically, but they are not abandoning the philosophical underpinning of their faith while they do it. They're just as scientific as the atheists, but they also have that faith thing that teaches them, yes, we may solve this mystery, but that doesn't mean we're going to understand every aspect of it. And this rather arrogant thing here, this Sean Carroll basically says, there's no reason to believe that we won't someday uncover all mysteries. Yeah, there are. They're not when you approach it from this perspective. Now, guess what, Barry? We're out of time.
We are totally out of time, yes.
So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.